This is with Donna Marie Doherty on Highland Radio. The kids are in charge to explore all things sustainable. Ours to Protect is funded by Commission Amman with a television licence fee and is a partnership between Highland Radio and the Independent Broadcasters of Ireland.
Good evening, this is Donna Marie Doherty with another round of Ours to Protect. We have no time to spare this week as we talk about fast fashion. But what is it?
We watched a documentary on Shein and like their factory and like how much they get paid by the hour, and they're only allowed one day off a year.
What kind of solutions there, like, did you explore what you could do instead?
In-store shopping, and like the quality of clothes were better when they're not coming from Shein.
Yeah.
Because the factory has very bad work conditions and like pay conditions as well.
That's some great key points. To learn a bit more about the true impact of fast fashion, I spoke to Anna Ní Mhairtín, a graduate of ATU Donegal. She studied fashion design with promotion.
Fast fashion is a business model where they mass produce clothing at an extremely fast rate, and they do this for the lowest price possible. So the garments are made to replicate the latest trends and fashion cycles. Sometimes they even copy designs outright. And the main objective is to maximise the profit and encourage people to be buying all of the time.
And that can sound good. That can sound like we're going to get loads of clothes for cheap. But the low price is actually a reflection of sometimes the quality not being very good. So can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes, so the low price often indicates that standards have been sacrificed at some point to get the price that low. So often the workers would be underpaid or overworked, and they often are in unsafe circumstances. So when you think about a t-shirt for maybe €5, that is highly unlikely that the fabric is good quality or sustainable.
And the process of making a t-shirt, if it was mass produced, what would that look like maybe compared to the likes of yourself designing a piece of clothing?
So the most common material that is used in a t-shirt would be cotton or polyester. And me as a designer, I would opt for maybe organic cotton or maybe a linen, which are both more ecologically friendly. But a mass-produced t-shirt like this will use cheap cotton from massive farms in India or China, and polyester, which is derived from plastic. So they're both very environmentally harmful options. It can take up to 2,700 litres of water to produce a single cotton t-shirt. So that's about the amount of water one person would drink in 2.5 years. So as you can imagine, it's incredibly taxing on our environment.
But in saying that there, though, you don't need to be buying really expensive clothes in order to be shopping sustainably. There's things we can do to fix the clothes that we have and the likes of that there. Would that be right to say?
Definitely. I don't think it's difficult to mend your clothes at all. I actually think it's even more accessible in today's day and age with the likes of YouTube. There are thousands of tutorials out there that can teach you everything you need to know, and all you need really is a needle and thread. And there's also so many cool places that you can get clothes from secondhand, such as Depop or Vinted, or even sharing with your friends. You know, sometimes I'll ask my friends if they're going to throw out some clothes or take it to the charity shop just to have a look through. And there's also the process of upcycling, where you can change the clothing or add different things to make it more your style.
Do you have any examples of upcycling of things maybe that you've done?
So yeah, a lot of the times if I get something secondhand, I'll maybe crop it to make it a bit more stylish, or maybe I'll take the collar off of a jumper, or I'll add little patches, or I could even sew in little buttons. Or there's so many different options, really.
And then whenever you do that, you have an original piece of clothing that nobody else is going to have.
Exactly. And it's about changing that mindset from disposability and actually valuing the clothing that we have. And if we do choose to pick something that's made of a better or higher standard material, then the more that we interact with and actually fix it, the more we actually end up valuing it, not, you know, throwing away everything.
And then I suppose the clothes that aren't made very well, that they're quite cheap, it always happens. It's happened to me a few times actually, where they end up ripping, or, you know, they go in the wash and they come out and you can't wear them anymore. If they're thrown out, where do they end up?
So most of the time, these clothes end up in landfills. I have seen an extraordinary surge of fast fashion clothing ending up in secondhand shops or even on Vinted, and just nobody wants to buy these clothes because, again, they're unraveling at the seams basically most of the time. So most of the time they end up in landfills in the global south. So countries such as Bangladesh or India, one of the largest largest landfill in the world in Chile has 66,000 tons of textiles, and we can actually see this landfill from space.
Oh my goodness. And you'd be right in, or would I be right in saying as well, that even the fabrics that these fashion companies, they mightn't use it all, and it also just ends up not even being used in landfill.
Exactly. A lot of the time it is incinerated, or sometimes these fabrics tend to end up in secondhand markets in the global south, which overwhelm the local economy and cause massive problems for them.
Anna has also just finished her graduate collection, which we have on our website if you want to look at it. It looks absolutely amazing. Our next guest is one of the brilliant young minds of Donegal that I so love to talk about. It's Davin Coyle, and he's just completed his Leaving Cert at Skull Cooaloo, and he was one of the winners of the first ever national ReLove Fashion Grand Final.
To be honest, I've always had a love for fashion. Like, I grew up around my Nana used to always work. She worked for a few places in Donegal Town. She worked for Hannah Hats and McGee's and different places like that. So I've kind of grown up surrounded by that kind of lifestyle. And I also have like a great passion for art and creating things. So I think they kind of go hand in hand. Whenever, you know, you love wearing, you're passionate about what you wear, and you see things that don't really exist, but you have ideas for them, I think it's like only natural that you start to kind of learn how to create your own kind of stuff that you want to wear and see more people wearing. So I think that was kind of where my real love for fashion came from. And obviously you can't be in fashion nowadays without knowing about sustainability and kind of the big effects that it's having, and the fashion industry is having, on the environment.
In saying that there, you have just done your Leaving Cert, so I can imagine being into fashion and wanting to wear things that are kind of on the latest trends, it's not going to be easy because you're in school. It's not to say you have a full-time job, so it can be really easy to be attracted to the likes of Shein and things like that there, where you can get it on the cheap.
500%. I do think definitely for students and for people like who aren't, like, obviously if you go to look nowadays for, you hear a lot about fast fashion, and when you read online it's like, oh, you know, to buy from slow fashion brands that are more like quiet luxury or whatever. But a lot of the time, their price points are really, really high. Mm-hmm. And that's not like, not a lot of people can afford that kind of stuff. So there obviously is a big draw to brands like Shein and Penneys and stuff for the price wise. Obviously, it's affordable. It's a real catch 22 because, like, obviously it's easier to buy things that are lower quality, but mm-hmm. cheaper. But I do think to be a more aware consumer, you really do take into consideration like that, although it's cheaper, it won't last you as long as something that does cost more, you know?
And like from people I've spoke to through Ours to Protect, a lot of younger people are really trying to hit that nail on the head. But you have taken that completely to the next level. A lot of the times that I see you, you're wearing things that you've created yourself or you've upcycled yourself. And it always looks great, just by the way to put that out there. But you won a competition that was ran by the Rediscovery Centre. So what was the competition, and how did you hear about it?
I did. So I actually heard about it through school originally. It was my art teacher, Alana O'Donnell, who mentioned it to me in art class one of the days. She said, listen, I've seen this competition. I think it'd be right up your alleyway. So I told her to send it my way and I'd be interested. And I was actually really interested as soon as I started reading about it. It was a competition to kind of encourage the upcycling and the whole, it was kind of like, it's very similar to Jean Couture, but it was more kind of aimed towards actual garment construction, wearability and washing and how it lasts kind of thing. So there was a lot more thought going into it with regards to like what fabrics you were using and like where they came from and what they were made of and how they would wash and how long they would last. There was a lot of that thought that went into it. For my own project, I actually ended up upcycling denim in a way that I never thought of doing it. I kind of had this idea that I was inspired by Mason Margiela piece actually, that was, there was a jumper that he'd done back in the 90s that was knit out of knitted denim. So I seen it and kind of thought, geez, like I've never seen this before and I wanted to give it a try. My creative kind of spark started to go in and I was like, I need to try this. So I actually, with the help from my nana, she taught me how to knit for the first time because I did not know how to do that. So that was a new skill I learned from the competition. And I used the denim from thrifted jeans from the charity shops. I was like really aware when buying that I wanted them to be cotton based and not a polyester. And if so, I try and get it above 70% cotton. So it would last longer. And I used them then and cut them into strips into like a so-called thread to be able to knit them together to create a hat, which I done for the competition. And then I also upcycled old wedding dresses from charity shops as well.
Wow.
Into the top for the outfit, because obviously the kind of whole idea of a wedding dress is very like single use, which is the whole kind of running trend with micro trends and trend cycles and fast fashion, things like that. It's very single use. So I kind of thought that that was another important area to explore. Obviously I learned, like I learned a lot of fun facts from the project. I learned that 2.16 million pairs of jeans end up in landfill each year, which is kind of baffling. Denim manufacturing is responsible for up to 20% of global water pollution, which is also kind of crazy. And more kind of facts about the wedding dresses and about how thousands of gowns are thrown away each year and they always end up in landfill. And usually like they are consisted or they're created from fabrics like sateen, which is obviously the polyester version of satin, to kind of be able to appeal to people's price points. But yeah, no, it was a really great competition. I learned a lot from it and kind of really enjoyed doing it. It was like, it was right up my alley.
Davin Coyle, remember that name. There was some mentions there of clothes that you might only get a wear out of once or twice, and also creating unique clothing, which came up in a Vox Pop where these girls created their own concert t-shirts.
But we just like found this white t-shirt and used them.
I think it was one I had left over from the Finn Valley show. Yeah, it was one I had left over from my school show because I needed a white t-shirt, so I reused it.
And we just like used like my old markers and wrote like lyrics and drew on the wee.
You got to design your own one.
Yes.
What concert was it?
Olivia Rodrigo.
So what kind of design did you do on it?
It was like ribbons. And it was like a lyric to one of the songs.
Like, was it fun doing that?
Yeah.
Would you, is it something you think that you would do or recommend for people to do?
Aye. Good crack.
Now you heard reference to a school show there, which brings us on to our next area, which is hobbies and how that can relate to fast fashion. The ladies I was speaking to are big into their drama and theatre and are members of the Ballard Youth Theatre, and they take part in their school shows too. We got talking to them about costumes and where they look to source them.
Well, sometimes we can just bring our own clothes or they just give us clothes there.
Do you ever see the same costumes be used in different shows?
Well, in one of my shows, I was a fairy godmother, and that was my first show. And when it was Emily's show, she wore my wings.
So I actually went over then to the Ballard Arts Centre and got a peep inside the costume room, which was amazing. And I got talking to Bernie Thompson and Kathleen McGowan from the Butt Drama Circle Committee. And we talked all things panto.
You always see the excitement and the joy on everybody's faces the first night that they put their costumes on. Whether it's horrific or it's outlandish or really, and I'm thinking of panto here, but if it's a more serious play, it really helps settle the person into their character as well.
But panto costumes are on another level.
On stage you have to take it, you know, if you're 100% in real life, then you're 150% on stage, and panto, you can go as far as you want.
Kathleen says there's costumes that was made way back in the day and they're still in action.
Rita Bradley made our costumes for years and years. She and I used to go to Derry way back in the day, buy the material, and that fabric place, I forget the name of it, and Rita would make the costumes. She made some amazing costumes, most of which are still down there in the costume room. She made fabulous coats for the dame. She made fabulous dresses for the princesses over the years. Her costumes were just divine. The last at the time, they're still there.
And the costumes or the pantos, like, you'll have the likes of your Sleeping Beauties. And the point being is that last year, for example, with Aladdin, there was a few other Aladdins as well. So there's, you're able to kind of share costumes with other groups if the pantos are on at different times. Would that happen often?
We very often would borrow from Remelton. They have an amazing array of costumes, and Jean is fantastic at lending, as long as she clean them and give them back to her. But we get a lot of costumes from her, particularly since we lost Rita. So it's either her or online. But her costumes too are first quality stuff. Mm. Really good.
Yeah, fabulous stuff. And then we have a lot of very good period piece costumes, so they've been lent out as well. So there's that kind of sharing goes on.
The sustainability element in it is, and it's good to be able to reuse and recycle things so that you're not ending up buying, I suppose, cheaper costumes that won't last. But there's also, for the club as well, the money element of it. Like, the more that you're able to get used out of something, the more it saves having to order in.
When you're ordering costumes now yourself for more recent productions, you do order larger sizes because it's easier to adjust them and bring them down, and then you can reuse them again
and let them out again.
Yeah,
I have a costume in my attic, a green costume that Cassie Cannon, deceased, who used to be a dressmaker in Avenue Street, made for me for the Miracle Worker, which was done in 1982, and that dress has been worn by so many people. It's been let in and it's been let out and it's been let in and let out. In fact, it's so frayed, the seams now is ready to give. But that dress has been on the stage so many times. She made it out of, you know, that fabric that you get for upholstering furniture? And she tied it around your waist here, and she tied it around your thighs there to make it stick out. And then the pleats in the dress fell over the top of it. It was a fantastic dress. Absolutely. I've worn it, a fancy dress as well, you know.
Yeah.
I love the dress. I could have looked at it. I adored it.
And we have Hilary upstairs as well, who's brilliant. I think only recently I busted a skirt on opening night, and it was like new the next morning, so it was for the rest of the show.
Yeah,
She's very handy. Very, very, very handy. Yeah.
I remember one play when I was being carried on stage. That was Robin Bastard, I think, and Sean Laffer. I could just hear the rip. His trousers ripped at the back, and myself and Porrick almost, you know, we just couldn't stop laughing at that. So, but he got a quick change as well. He managed to locate another pair of trousers for the rest of the show.
There you go, all in a day's work. The theatre does have great examples of upcycling, from repairing and altering all inside the costume room. Whenever I was in there, I saw a few frocks that used to be curtains. But it's just not the stage that has the room for sustainability. Loads of GAA clubs have implemented a boot swap system for kids as they grow out of their shoes so quickly. Brenda McElhenney is the PRO of Neve Padraig GAA in Muff, and she told me about how the system fared out for them.
The idea came about because, like, we have a lot of young ones, I suppose, within our club. And no more than myself, parents have lots of gear lying about the house. And the kids grow at such a rapid pace now that, you know, they outgrow their football boots or whatever it is, but they're still in brilliant condition. So that kind of prompted it. So it was, you know, that there's all this, as I say, gear, football boots lying in houses that are in perfect condition, but they just don't fit the kids anymore. And it was just about, you know, swapping then within the club, you know, because, as I say, we have quite a few younger members especially. And it was just, you know, so people could, you know, bring in something that they don't need, or if there's something there, you know, that fitted their own kids, like, to lift away at it. And to reduce, I suppose, cost as well. Like, these football boots are so expensive. And it just kind of takes maybe a bit of the financial burden away from parents, so it does as well as promoting, you know, our, so it's not a barrier maybe for parents as well, or for, you know, somebody wanting maybe to start or try out Gaelic, you know, that they don't have to spend all this money on the equipment or the gear. You know, they can just pick up a pair of boots, see how they get on, and just to kind of encourage inclusivity as well.
And what way does it work? Is it like a wee rack? Is it a box that they're in? And I suppose, where is it in the clubhouse?
Yeah, so what we did is we ran it over a weekend. So it was like we had a boot swap weekend where people could drop in gear that they weren't using. And then we just had it all sitting out and anybody could come and lift or leave anything. And since that then, anything was left over, like we have it in a crate in a storeroom, and people can come and lift stuff, or like what we find, you know, like kids might forget boots maybe for training, or like their boots might even burst when they're training, you know, so they can just go to the boot room or go to the crate and get boots out of it. And it's like, there's ones, I know we talk about younger ones, like, but there's larger sizes there as well. So it's just something that's kind of there. There's a box there, can everybody knows about it on an ongoing basis, and they can drop stuff in or lift stuff out of it whenever suits.
Was there a while lot of organising in it, or is it something that could be done in every club? Because, you know, it kind of in every parish of Donegal, there's going to be a club.
Yeah, and I think quite a lot of clubs, you know, do have like a boot scheme in place, or a boot room, or some sort of a system like that, you know. And it's just, like, there's not a huge amount of organising, I suppose, as such within it. It's just about putting the word out there that, you know, if you have any gear, drop it in. And then, like, it's more for people, they can kind of come and go themselves or pick the stuff up themselves. It's not something, you know, that's manned as such, or that there's restricted access to or anything like that there. You know, like all coaches have access to it, or if anybody wants to drop stuff in, you know, there's no problem with that. So it's just something that's there, and once it's kind of up and going, there's, say, there's not a huge amount of management as such within it.
How easy and simple is that? I want to go back there to something that Anna and Davin touched on, and that was shopping online versus in store. There are pros and cons, which we did weigh up.
I like going into the shop because, like, I see nice things.
Uh-huh. And are you able to try them on in the shop?
Yeah.
Why do you like trying things on in the shop?
Because I like wearing them.
In shop, they have better quality. Things on Shein or Temu could rip very easily. It's cheaper on Shein or Temu, but they take forever to deliver.
I prefer going into the shop. It's nicer clothes.
So there's clear positives to in-store shopping and charity shopping. You're supporting local jobs. And of course, a lot of the time we order online very cheap. The websites are coming from the other side of the world. But there is pros to ordering online. It is cheaper. You can do it from home and you can find exactly what you're looking for. Well, this is where Vinted and Depop come into play. Both are platforms where you can buy and sell second-hand clothing. Lisa lives in Letterkenny and she recently started using Vinted.
My daughter, she's in her 20s and she was moving to London and she's got too many clothes to pack and take with her. So she actually put them on Vinted, and that's when it first started in Ireland. Mm. And she made like over €500.
That's great. So it is. It's great that clothes get a new life, but it's also really good that you can make some money as well off of it.
Yes. It was good for her, like, moving forward, but also for us to create space in the house.
Yeah, exactly. And Lisa, have you started yourself since then?
Yes. Yeah, so then I opened an account and I've started selling and buying as well, because I was surprised at how many lovely items that are for sale, you know, at such a reasonable price.
What kind of things would you be getting on Vinted?
Well, because I'm going on my summer holidays, I got a capitan and a dress and some shorts. And you're looking as little as €2 to €3 per item. You really can't pass it by. And same as what I'm selling. I'm selling dresses that have been in the wardrobe for like a couple of years and probably won't wear again. So put them up and selling them.
I suppose whenever you're looking at the likes of the quality, some people might be sceptical that, you know, what's photographed might actually be what comes.
Well, I think it's very well monitored by Vinted. And once you receive an item of clothing, you can put whether you accept it or not, you know, if it doesn't fit the description. So I feel like you are protected as well. Like if someone had put something up and it didn't come and it wasn't clean or there was a mark on it, you don't have to accept it, and then they can pay to get it sent back and you'll get refunded your money.
And then finally, Lisa, I'm wondering about the process of putting something up for sale. Is it hard to do or is it awkward?
No, you just take lots of photos. And it's actually straightforward. It tells you have to put on what category, description, the brand, the size, and then how much you'd like for it. And then you know, whatever, say for instance, you put your €5, that's the amount that you will get. Now, people will message you and make offers, and it's up to you if you want to accept them. They might say, oh, we take four for it. You know, so it's entirely up to you.
How long would it take you to, maybe to say you had one item, how long does it, like this from start to finish, from taking the photos to putting it up, does it take long?
Well, to start with, it took me a while, but I've improved now. I'll take four or five. If I have like five or six items, I'll just take loads and loads of pictures of them and just sit then for like 10 minutes and put them all up. It's very, very straightforward.
So, so convenient. Again, there are options like Facebook groups, and I actually joined one a few months ago, and it was centred around the Lyfford Strabane area. Lily Foskett's the lady behind Permanently Borrowed Facebook group. She told me all about it.
So the idea behind the group is just to give people some kind of way to sell on their clothes, to just make things a wee bit more recyclable, if anything. And it was great for people just to make a lot of more pound for themselves, because as you know yourself, everything is quite expensive right now. So that was really all. I was clearing out my clothes one day and I thought, this is a sin, throwing all this away. And most of the charity bins are just stacked up, and with the weather at the time, they were just getting destroyed, sitting out in the rain, you know. And I thought, there has to be other ways to get this to be moved on in different areas. It's going to help other people as well. And then the idea came from there. And so here we are.
So the group, I suppose, targets in and around Lyfford Strabane area, that sort of Finn Valley region. It's to sort of link people up that way.
Uh-huh. So there's actually a lot of people from the Oma direction as well. Strabane, Lyfford, Oma, and all the wee towns in between. You know, it's went a lot further than what I expected it ever to do, you know. It's been great.
I was going to say, it really took legs, so it has. And what first really struck me, because I also am in the group and I've been in it now for quite a while, I love it, sort of, when I'm going for a wee scroll, is that the name. Where did that come from, or how did you come up with it?
It was completely just off the top of my head. Me and my boyfriend were sitting and we were talking about it, and we had a couple ideas, and then I was like, I just like the idea of that it's borrowed, but it's like, it's yours. So then it was just Permanently Borrowed came up, and that was it. It just stuck. We were like, that's it. It sounds good. So we just kind of rolled with it then.
You know, what kind of impact do you think the group's had? Have you got a lot of feedback there? Because there was an awful lot of ladies who said that to me that I needed to get speaking to you about it.
Yeah. So there's a lot of wee stories I could go on about, but there was more so at the first event. I had Bulb Woman before that, even before the event, I had a woman message me and say she had earned enough money to buy her family shopping for the week without having to count pennies, basically. And just that she was so grateful for be given the platform, you know. And then whenever we created the actual event then itself, the woman that had the stalls and were selling all their things and whatever, they made great profit for themselves, and they were able to buy the oil for the house, you know, the heating oil, and they're shopping again. And even there was some birthdays, kids' birthdays coming up, and they said it just took the pressure off, you know. So it was great to be able to hear that, you know, that everybody else is benefiting from it too.
And do the events be on often, or how do they work?
So I've had two so far. It's just a matter of trying to get it worked on with my own schedule as long as the businesses in the town and such. So we've had two so far. One was in the fir trees, and then the next was in the cricket club. So I just like the idea of being able to give the businesses in the town a bit of a turnaround as well, you know. And they've both been great. I can't thank all the staff enough. If anything, they were fantastic. So I think we'll have another one just at the end of summer, or coming into just the autumn time again. So I'm just trying to do them whenever I know that the time's right to have time to really dedicate to it, because I'm not the type of person to go half bullered at all. So
the Permanently Borrowed group is kind of Lyfford Strabane, Oma direction. For people then thinking, God, this would be great for somewhere about where I live, what's the workload like for you? And, you know, have you any tips that kind of way?
There's room for everybody. There's actually a girl also in Derry that does one called Revive, but she has a lot of other alleyways going with her events. There's loads she does. It's brilliant as well. So I think it's going to be something that's coming up more. Like, you're going to see it more often than not, because we all do realise, like, it's a lot more sustainable for everybody to just recycle what we have. And it's too hard to keep up with fast fashion this last how many years. I just feel like it works more for everybody. But tips for doing it, I just think, just don't be scared and jump in feet first. try it, and if you fail, it doesn't really matter.
I'd say it is very rewarding, is it?
It is. You know, there's a lot of helpful, great women, you know, and even men too, like they all do jump in as well. They help things get going whenever they see a good thing. So I think that's really all you could put more to it, is there's a lot more to people to thank for it than just myself.
Lily is a very modest woman, but it is true what she said. It's just like the title, it's ours to protect, and we do all need to work together on it. But that's where we're going to have to leave it for this evening. A massive thank you to all my contributors and to you, the listeners at home. Until next time, have a great one.
This is
Our Super Set
with Donna Marie Doherty on Highland Radio. The kids are in charge to explore all things sustainable. Ours to Protect is funded by Commission Amman with a television licence fee and is a partnership between Highland Radio and the Independent Broadcasters of Ireland.